I'm back at the Elkhorn Slough. I'm Joseph. This is Input English. Today I've returned to a place I've always enjoyed coming. This is the Elkhorn Slough Reserve. It's a research facility that's open to the public, I think about 4 days a week. It offers wonderful hiking trails and good glimpses of nature. The trails are very accessible, and the staff is quite friendly. I've been here before, and I've made videos here before, and I've returned for a very specific reason. So let's get started. The reason I have returned here is I want something. I discovered it while I was on a very long road trip. I drove nearly 3,000 miles. And for my efforts, I got great benefit. I got time by myself in nature. I got to breathe very fresh air. I had time to think about things. And I had an opportunity to explore a lot of interesting places. On the way home, while driving, many thoughts went through my head, and one of those thoughts was, well, this has been an interesting long driving trip, but could I have not found analogous or similar things more close to home? I asked myself the rhetorical question, couldn't I find something interesting in California to visit more frequently? When we ask rhetorical questions, the convention is we don't really expect an answer. The question, if it's a rhetorical question, is just to state a concept, state a concern, state a question, and then allow people to form their own opinions about it. As I thought about this question, couldn't I find wonderful places in California to visit without driving 3,000 miles, this place came to mind. Because it is a nature research reserve, it is substantially unspoiled. Now, right here, you can see there is an area where the grass has been mowed. This is right near the buildings, and the staff does have to be aware that this is a grassland, among other things. There is a lot of grassland, and then there are some wooded areas. Further down, there's a wetland, but these grasslands are susceptible to wildfire. And so I attribute this mowed section around the buildings as fire mitigation. My familiarity with that is simple. I do the same thing at our house. I mow all the high grass down. Once it is dried, it's dangerous to have high grass because of wildfires. Other than this mowing around the buildings, I see this place as relatively untouched. I don't see a lot of intervention being done by the staff. So today, I'd like to take a walk into this Elkhorn Reserve Research Facility and show you some different places that I've not taken you before. This is the main path, the main walkway away from the visitor center into the nature reserve. It's paved. It's wide enough for cars to drive upon, but no cars drive upon it, save for perhaps the official vehicles pertinent to this facility. Such a nice, smooth, level path makes accessibility a non-issue. I made a couple of videos here last year, but I've not been here at this time of year making videos. The wildflowers are out. This is springtime, and the big difference I see today compared to previous visits is the number of magnificent wildflowers. The winter and spring rains have brought a lot of vegetation growth, and now we see all these wildflowers. So let's continue. This road I branched off onto is a side road that leads away from the wetlands, at least temporarily, and we're going to walk next to the grasslands and next to the wooded area. To the right, there is a grove of oak trees, and then to the left, of course, we have the grasslands. This path will eventually take us down to the water, but I've gone away from the area that was the old dairy farm. In a previous video, I showcased the old dairy barn and the area that they worked as a dairy. Some of that land was reclaimed from the sea by levees, and then when this became a nature reserve, those levees were not maintained, and that land that was previously used as pasture land was reclaimed by the water. It's now part of the wetland. So again, I'm branching off because this path should take us into the oak groves. I said that I came here because I was looking for something. I was looking for opportunities to explore more near to home without having to drive thousands of miles. That is certainly available here. There were things I rediscovered for myself during my recent trip. One of the things I recommitted to was eating healthy food and following a whole food plant-based eating plan. Based on my reading of that subject, I want to make sure I don't take in an unnecessary large number of calories per day, and I have identified the advantages of a 16-8 intermittent fasting program. These are things that I learned in the past, but had fallen by the wayside. That is, I got out of the habit of implementing what I know to be the best way for me to maintain health as I choose food. Now, I certainly want food to be fun and interesting, and I don't want to miss out on a lot of things that are available worldwide because of some very fussy eating plan that I've foisted upon myself. To solve that challenge, my wife invented the Paris rule. I implemented the Paris rule the other day. What is my wife's Paris rule? Well, her rule about Paris is when you are in Paris, you should eat like a Parisian. You should enjoy the local cuisine. So if I have chosen a whole food plant-based eating plan with moderate calorie restriction and a 16-8 intermittent fasting program, that's for my day-to-day per routine. That is not what I do in Paris. So the other day I was not in Paris, I was in Santa Fe, New Mexico, and I did not want to restrict my eating while in Santa Fe. The food is way too good, way too delicious, and way too interesting to miss out on. I still looked for plant-based options, but I was not operating under tyranny created by myself. No. So now we're going deeper into the woods. This place is, of course, beautiful. There are a lot of birds you can probably hear in the trees around me. We're not having any problems with wind noise. This looks familiar. I'm not sure what it is. It reminds me of elderberries that I saw growing when I was growing up. I'm not sure that's what they are, but I will inquire when I get back to the visitor center. Here is the view as I came around that corner. You can see the Elkhorn Slough. As I've said in previous videos, this place, because of the vegetation, has its own unique smell. These plants seem to be giving off a wonderful salad of aromas, and each step smells different than the previous one. So what else did I identify on the trip that I choose to reclaim as relates to this visit? Exercise. In the 21st century, it is super easy to settle into a sedentary lifestyle. This is not good for us. For adults, there are guidelines on exercise to promote health. You can go to various sources for those guidelines, and they are opinions and professional opinions based on research. One source of that sort of information is the American College of Lifestyle Medicine. That professional organization recommends 30 minutes of moderate exercise 5 days a week. That sounds like a pretty good strategy for putting some effort into getting healthier on an ongoing basis and reaping the benefits. They went on to add that if you do more exercise than that 30 minutes 5 days a week, that you will get more benefit. They did not address at what point you get to diminishing returns. Most things like exercise have a dose response curve. That is, with zero participation, there is zero benefit. And with increasing participation, there is increasing benefit. But these are usually not purely linear functions. They usually taper off as the doses get higher and higher. I would expect that 1 hour a day of exercise 5 days a week would likely give twice the benefit. But I would doubt that 8 hours a day would give 16 times the benefit. In English, we talk about diminishing returns. That is, if you do something and you do more and more of it, you get more and more response or benefit. But then there comes a point where doing a lot more doesn't give you much return for your increased effort. I don't think many of us get to the point of diminishing returns with our exercise. I think what happens instead is we run out of available discretionary time, or our priorities don't put exercise high enough on the priority list to put a great deal of time into it. There was a time years ago when I was a researcher that I embraced long distance running. And during that period of time, it was common for me to run an hour a day, 6 days a week. It gave me a very good picture of the dose response curve for me and exercise, because as I increased my mileage and my time running each week, I saw a lot of benefits. My body weight got down to 145 pounds. By many people's standards, I was quite slender. My resting heart rate got down to 45 beats a minute. That's nice and slow. And then, after I left that research position and went to an educational position to get more training, I was overcome by events. That is, my day-to-day schedule was no longer in my control, and so my daily exercise of more than an hour a day fell by the wayside. and new habits replaced it. We're now down at the water's edge. Some of the weeds here are brambles, that is, they are vines with lots of stickers, and they're probably blackberries. I don't see any fruit on them yet. We've come to a place where they have built a dock out over the water. So that's an opportunity for us to take a look at what there is to see. Now this water that we're approaching is seawater. In the past, there was a lot of inflow of fresh water, but because of changes in the way water in this part of California flows, we don't see much ingress of fresh water into this slough. So for our purposes, this is just seawater. It's also tidal. That is, the tides change the water level. And so right now, I can infer that the tide is out. This is low tide because I've been here before on this very dock, and the water is super low compared to the last time I was here. This is low tide. So I have used the American College of Lifestyle Medicine's guideline as a starting point. But my goals are a little different. That is, I would like optimal health, including good strength and endurance. So the 30 minutes of moderate exercise per day by walking, I consider a starting point. When I was hiking in the desert, some of the hikes were in excess of 6 miles, and that required a lot of endurance. That told me that I really want more out of my day-to-day exercise program than just to meet a minimal guideline provided by the American College of Lifestyle Medicine. In other words, I want more. I want more strength and more endurance. Because it is so easy to fall into a habit of sedentary living, my first approach to this problem is to make sure that I do get exercise every day. When I say every day, the metric I've set for myself is 6 days a week. As I think about this and talk about it on this video, it comes to mind that I probably would be well served if I were to journal this, keep a log of it. In years past, I looked at journaling skeptically. I viewed journaling as the tool of the self-absorbed. It made no sense to me to write down mundane, minute-to-minute accounts of routine events because I sensed that basically no one would care. Why would it matter? Why write it down? It just seemed to be very self-absorbed. I've changed my mind about journaling because journaling really is a great tool for seeing things and understanding things better. In other videos, I've talked about my morning pages that I do every day to get my thoughts together. It has been the most effective method I've ever seen to get away from the issue of writer's block. Now you might say, well, you don't write these episodes, you just record them. Well, true, I don't write a script, but I need to know what I'm going to say. If I'm going to turn on the camera and speak into the microphone, I need to have something to say that's worth watching, that's worth listening to, and that has to come from somewhere. I can tell you very simply, it comes from my morning pages. So, with respect to exercise, it probably would make sense to log my activities in this area. I'll give that some thought. These plants are thistles. There are a lot of thistles in the area. After the blooms have finished, they will generate a bunch of seeds, and the seeds will look similar to this. They will be equipped with these hairs, which will allow them to be broadcast by the wind to be dispersed. In this area, there is a very important thistle for agriculture, and that is the artichoke. Because artichokes are indeed thistles, but they are harvested for food, and they're quite the delicacy. They're delicious. I must admit, I don't buy them very often, because when I grew up eating artichokes, they were always dipped in butter. And now that I don't buy or eat butter, I don't naturally buy artichokes. I should probably explore how to eat artichokes as part of a whole food plant-based diet. I'm not going to go back to adding butter to them. Butter is delicious, I get that. It's just so full of saturated fat, I'm not going to actually eat it. We've come to a very fun place here on the trail. You can see behind me the trees and the vegetation form a tunnel-like shape. It's as if we're in a tunnel. It's very quiet, and there are no people around. There were a lot of people in the parking lot, but once I got out onto the trail, away from the main paved walkway, there are no people out here at all. It's super quiet. One of the challenges that people have always had is the challenge of navigation. Now, navigation could be finding one's way in a particular location or as one changes locations. So driving from California to Utah required some degree of navigation, but as you know, modern devices like smartphones make for very easy going in terms of navigation. You don't need the map books that my dad used when I was a kid, because it's on your phone. Navigation locally can be more of a challenge. I can remember years ago we were in Venice, and back then there were very few cell phone towers in Venice. The cell phones that we had so-called GPS, but what it really had was position localization based on proximity to cell phone towers. In an area like Venice, where there were very few towers, the cell phone couldn't really determine its location. Luckily, in Venice, it's not difficult to navigate. The street signs are clear, and the whole area is fairly small. If you walk in a particular direction long enough, you'll run into the water, and then you'll be able to get your bearings and go where you want to. So luckily we found that our cell phones were fairly useless in Venice, but they were also unnecessary. Places like this, cell phone navigation can be limited. If you're away from a lot of cell towers and your cell service is poor or perhaps even non-existent, you can't really depend on your cell phone for navigation. Luckily for me, today, these trails are all constructed as loop trails. So if you get on a particular trail, it will bring you back to a point that you can find your way back to the visitor center. The only exception to that, I think, is the Hummingbird Island trail, and that has a loop at the end and you wind up having to go back whence you came. So we're coming out of the oaks again. To my right is a marsh. To my left, the oak trees, and the path continues. I said earlier in this video that the staff in this nature reserve are fairly hands-off. Well, that's a bit of an overstatement. They do give a friendly helping hand to some animals, some wildlife. And here's something along those lines. This is not labeled in a way that I can read it, but looking at the structure, that appears to be a little house set up for bats. It looks like there's a textured landing zone and then an entrance from below that looks like a nest box for bats to roost. They do have other birdhouses, and they have some larger boxes that they put up in the big dairy barn and in some of the larger trees that are intended for owls to use for nesting. So I probably should recharacterize this place as a largely hands-off nature reserve where they do give a small helping hand to some of the creatures who live in this area. Well, here's the exception that proves the rule. I'm on a so-called loop trail, and the loop ends in a cul-de-sac. Overhead, you may be able to hear an airplane. It's a small single-engine aircraft. Looking at it, it's a high wing. Listening to it, it has four cylinders. This area at the edge of Monterey Bay has a lot of aircraft traffic. Ordinarily, I would be completely unconcerned with that, but the noise of the engine could interfere with you hearing and understanding what I'm saying. So I have, from time to time, been compelled to shut off the recording to wait for an aircraft to pass. So now I'm going back whence I came so that I can head back toward the visitor center. People have an interesting relationship with the sun. The sun is very important for us. It provides basically everything. It provides energy. It provides warmth. And for human physiology, it provides the ability to convert one form of vitamin D to another form of vitamin D. But like so many things, the sun and sun exposure is really a double-edged sword. And we do know that lots of sun exposure direct onto human skin can promote the development of skin cancers. Two in particular, one being basal cell carcinoma and the other melanoma. Neither of those two diseases is desirable. So while I'm out here enjoying nature, for the most part I'm wearing a hat. I find that the hat is not very conducive to producing a good video. So I take it off when I am recording, but the hat is here with me to mitigate sun exposure risk. Of course, we can use sunscreens. In the past, a lot of the sunscreens that were available had a lot of toxic chemicals in them and carried their own risk. More modern sunscreens are better, but I'm always wondering if I'm putting some sort of chemical on me or into my system, what sort of unintended consequences will be uncovered in the future. That has certainly been the case with a lot of pharmaceuticals. That is, when they were tested, the initial results suggested they were safe and effective, but they failed at scale. Once they got scaled up to where a huge segment of the population was taking that medication, we uncovered the unintended consequences of that pharmaceutical. This is why I actively avoid pharmaceuticals. I came upon a nice bench, and it seemed like a great place to sit down and rest a moment. One of the questions that occurred to me on my trip, and I've remembered it again today, is the question, when is the best time to start an exercise program? There's an analogous question: when is the best time to embrace a healthy eating plan? And of course, we could ask, when is the best time to start learning a new language like English? There's another way to pose that question, and that is, when is the second best time to do each of those things? Because according to an old Chinese proverb, the best time to do each of those things would be decades in the past. But since that's unavailable to us, the second best time to embrace a good eating plan, a good exercise plan, and the learning of a new language would be today. I invite comments below. And if you like videos like this, be sure to click on this one next. See you soon.